Right on. Well, thank you for doing this. Thanks for taking the time to join us here in Vancouver, Canada.
Sure.
Have you been here before?
No, I've always wanted to go.
Oh, yeah. It's a great place. And you live in New York right now?
I do. I live just north of New York City.
Okay. Right on. As an author and a comic book writer, a pretty cool way to pay the bills. What's an average day look like for you, BJ? Or is there even such a thing?
Oh, God. so much reading that whenever people ask me that, I'm always afraid to give them an answer because it's so boring. Like right now I have about 13 or 14 books on my desk, right? And so one stack is for a book I'm ghostwriting for an HR practitioner and slash executive at some company. And the other half is like books on Nevada, like the history of Nevada and the people, which I'm using for the She-Hulk TV pitch I'm working on. So it's a lot of reading and research each day.
Oh, hold up. Back up to this. What's this She-Hulk thing you're pitching? What's going on there?
Tell us about that. So basically, I'm a huge fan of She-Hulk.
Who isn't? Can you trust somebody that isn't?
No, you can't. That's my barometer, right? Like, if they don't like She-Hulk, or
totally.
Are you friend or foe? You're definitely foe. So I was just like, look, okay, so clearly Hulu is now where Disney's going to put these adult shows, right? Like, that's kind of what they've said to the entertainment press.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have what could be like a really fun pitch for, you know, who doesn't, but for She-Hulk. So I've been working on it for almost about 6 months now. I'll have it posted online next month in May for everyone to check out and read.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to go through the process of actually being pitched. I don't think it'll be picked up because there's better, smarter people out there than me to do it. But I'd like to at least put it out there and say, look, here is an idea for She-Hulk, which is a lot of fun.
Which were the comic books, the series and stuff as a kid, which were you into? Was it Marvel, DC, both?
It was all Marvel, and it wasn't a preference. What happened was I grew up right next door to a local convenience store.
Okay.
And they had a little rack in the back, and it was all Marvel. Like, they never carried DC. So my first comic was Jim Valentino's Guardians of the Galaxy #1. And I picked that up for a while, and then eventually my older brother started taking me to a comic shop where I learned of DC and Image's existence.
Right. And what did you think about Avengers Endgame? And by the time you're going to be a guest of this podcast, we'll be long past worrying about spoilers.
Great. It was fine. I didn't hate it. I enjoyed it while I was watching it, but the more I thought about it, I was like, okay, you know, I was expecting something completely different, but this was good. I liked what we got. So, I was a little surprised. We can go into spoilers so I can talk about this.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised that for the Black Widow to die, she had so little screen time between Infinity War and Endgame. Like, I felt it didn't hit as much because she had become less and less of a presence in the Avengers movies. I think, like, the second Captain America movie is really the last time where she's really got a huge role. You know, and so to me, I felt a little underwhelmed by that. I was totally fine with Cap's ending. I know people kind of freaked about that, but I liked the Agent Carter TV show, and there was always like this running joke of that she's got a secret husband, and Endgame kind of resolves that if you're an Agent Carter TV fan.
Right. Yeah.
So I liked it for that reason. So, yeah, I mean, it was totally fine. I'm still processing it. Like, I just saw it on Sunday, and I'm still thinking about it, but I don't think I liked as much as Infinity War.
No, I didn't either. It was a 3-hour-long movie that probably could have been 2 hours.
Yeah, or at least split up into two more films.
Or that, yeah.
Yeah, because I felt that way about Infinity War also. I kind of felt like there is so much going on here that I would have almost rather you guys separated it. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they did that for Harry Potter and they did that for Twilight, you know, where they broke the final film into two parts. So I would have been okay with that. But yeah, I think I totally agree on Endgame.
Yeah, and I think that, and maybe you'll agree with me here, BJ, it feels like because they've done such grandiose and such epic movies, that when you go back to just a Hulk movie, just a Captain America movie, will they see the return that they've seen with these huge movies like Infinity War and Endgame? Will they see people coming to the theater for those movies?
I think so. I think Thanos will be back.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I think that when he said, I am inevitable, I kind of smiled because, you know, my first, when I was 7 or 8 years old, my first big crossover for Marvel was the Infinity Gauntlet.
Right.
And as you know, Thanos is constantly coming back, thanks to death and other.
And interesting that they haven't brought in Warlock for that Infinity Gauntlet part.
Yeah, I think they have different plans for Adam Warlock. You know, I think that we're going to see him as the villain in Guardians 3.
Yeah.
And then that'll kind of be like its own little thing. I think for sure, you know, to answer your question, they're going to go hard in a different direction. I think that they're going to go more into like the mystical, magical stuff. You know, they've talked about the Living Tribunal. They tried jamming him into Infinity War and Endgame, and they couldn't do it. But the fact that he's come up so many times makes me think, oh, okay, well, if we're going to do that, then we're going to get Mephisto, and we're going to get Death, and we're going to get Nightmare, who's the villain in Doctor Strange Part 2. So I think that it'll be different enough from like a big cosmic soap opera that it'll keep people interested.
Mm-hmm. You know, the one series as a kid that I really enjoyed that I'm surprised they haven't done it, and it's probably just because it's even bigger than what we've already seen, is The Secret Wars with Beyonder.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, like, this is something that comes up a lot. I'm actually not a huge Secret Wars guy. I like the general concept of it because I think it's the easiest possible way to bring in the Defenders, right, and to bring in Fantastic Four and X-Men without having to stop and explain who those people are.
Because right.
All you need to do is say, okay, well, the Beyonder picked them, and here they are, and blah blah blah, off they go. My thing is like, just anytime you have heroes punching heroes, like it's. There's a part of me that would love to see it. You know, I would love to see the Thing fight the Hulk on the screen, but then there's another part of me that's like, okay, that's fine for 5 minutes, but, I mean, like, how long can you make this interesting? And I think we saw a Batman versus Superman. You really got to stretch to make, like, and even Civil War to a lesser extent, you really got to stretch it to make heroes punching heroes in the face interesting for about 2 hours.
Right. Right. And if you could have a superpower, which power would you want to have?
Definitely telepathy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be a lot of fun. I find, like, more often than not, the remote is never where I need it to be. So, it would be great. Or, like, better yet, like, go to a lot of Mets games, and so up in the bleachers, and so you're not close to the food court because you're up in, like, the cheap seats, and so it'd be kind of nice to have the Shake Shack come up to you through use of telepathy while you're watching the game.
Using your power for good. Right.
That's right.
Okay. BJ, you've got a great online presence. Your Twitter feed, always a lot of fun. Do you remember what it was like before social media? And how has social media changed the way that you approach marketing your writing?
Yeah, I mean, I talk about this a lot in Social Media is Bullshit, where what we call social media has been around forever. I mean, and if you think about that with Twitter, I mean, Twitter is basically AOL Instant Messenger. You know, it's like a big AIM group chat that's just nicer looking. And before we had Facebook, you know, you had MySpace, and before we had MySpace, you had Friendster, and before you had Friendster, you had, like, within the internal social networks of places like Zanga.com and LiveJournal, and even GeoCities and Yahoo to a lesser extent. So, to me, it's, you know, I can remember life before the technology was nice and shiny and polished, like, because that's really the key difference.
Right.
Is that it's so much easier to use today than it was back then. I don't think it's really changed how I market anything, though. I found that I use the Twitter feed as kind of like this dumping ground of, I don't have a place for this stuff. You know, I don't have a place where I can just say, hey, I think Bosch is a great TV show. Like, I don't, there's no space for me to do that. And so for me, I found that, you know, social media is kind of a great vehicle to do that, so that the people that do like you can get to know a little bit more about you.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Friendster and MySpace and all these different platforms. I wonder if Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, today's key platforms, I wonder if we'll see those platforms slide and other ones take their place.
Yeah, I mean, so another book that I ghostwrote for a tech company executive was sort of like the history of all these different platforms. And we've seen that over and over again with tech, where sooner or later, you know, the hot company, let's say it's Netscape, sells to AOL for $4 billion, even though Netscape never made any money, and even though Netscape was like a dominant browser for almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the tendency of these companies to ultimately collapse and be replaced by something else. The thing that's different that didn't happen back then was that Google and Facebook specifically have a monopoly over, you know, display advertising and what we would think of as social. And even though Facebook is making all sorts, especially I think it was just today that Mark Zuckerberg was doing the Tech Developers Conference F8 for Facebook, and they're making all sorts of noises now about changing Facebook and making it more private and merging WhatsApp with Messenger and making that private. The difference is that we've never had that. Like, we've never had this multi-billion dollar company that has almost like a lock, a virtual lock on online advertising. And so it's a little curious to see if Facebook and Google go away. But then you've got things like Twitter and Snap where, you know, they've definitely dropped off from where they were. I mean, you know, Twitter 2009, 2010 was kind of its moment. And ever since then, they may gain users, but it's nowhere near a significant number that we think of when we think of social. So I don't really know if they will, because I think the dynamic is different. If, at least in the States, if we get more Democrats in, I think you will see a change because eventually someone is going to break up Google, Amazon, and Facebook. So I do think that we'll see a change, but I don't think it's going to happen the way it happened in the past where, you know, the technology just got better and someone came along with a better idea and bought them up.
Interesting. All right, BJ, let's get outside of writing comic books and, of course, what you're known for. I'm curious, what are you binging on right now? What are you binge watching that you can't get enough of?
Old legal shows. As part of as part of the She-Hulk thing, right? I looked up all the Law and Orders, and I sat and all of SVU is up on Hulu in the States.
Right.
So I plowed through that, and I plowed through stuff like The Practice, and so I mean that, like, you know, there's stuff like that for research. But the thing I tend to binge on are shows that I just don't have time to get to that I really like. So like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Is a great example of something that exists, and you know it exists, and you know it's wonderful, but you just can't get to it, right? Because it was airing in a stateside, it was airing Friday nights at 9 o'clock, and, you know, I've got stuff to do. So,
and I've got a life, so I can't...
Right, exactly, yeah. Right? Yeah. So, you know, so stuff like that, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Jane the Virgin, these shows like, oh crap, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but it's Hank Azaria, and he's like a failed baseball announcer.
Oh, yeah.
That's a terrific show, but it's like an oddball show that you just wouldn't, that you have to seek it out, right? Like you have to go and find it. And so stuff like that is what I tend to binge watch.
Right. What was your first concert?
My first concert? Oh, shoot. It's got to be The Offspring.
Oh, yeah. Great.
The Offspring. And, yeah, like I'm a child in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So Offspring, Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Lit opened for them. Wow. And then there was, like a really crappy band between them. But that was my first concert.
You know, they're still pumping it out. They actually have just finished up recording their latest record. I don't know when it's out. I think it's out this year.
It's crazy to me that some of these bands, it's because it's weird, right? Because in the 90s, if you weren't on the radio or you weren't on MTV, you didn't exist.
Yeah.
But now, one of the nice things about the internet and social with the way it exists is that a band like The Offspring never really goes away. It just sort of quietly churns out these albums, and then maybe they have like this, like Motley Crue is having another cultural moment, right? Because for the first time in a decade, their music is top of the charts because of the Netflix miniseries that came out and the next Netflix movie.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that aliens have visited Earth?
No, I'm one of those people who think that we live in a simulation. and there's a lot of like astrophysicists that tend to agree with us, and so I think that someone has to be watching it all. So, that's where I fall on that. Right. You know, there's got to be an audience for this.
So we're in a simulation, and is there a way to win this simulation then, or?
Oh no! We're all kind of just filling our purpose of whatever it is that we're supposed to do within this simulation. So, I think it's you know, Kurt Vonnegut sort of, you know, kind of his experience with World War II. He kind of came out and was like, "Look, there's no purpose to anything. Like your only objective as a human is to not be a dick. And if you can do that and just be kind to other people, then that's your purpose." And I sort of fall into that mindset.
Well, that could be one of the best answers I've ever gotten for that one. Do you like to gamble? If so, what's the most you've won or lost?
Oh, well, I can tell you the most I've lost. The answer is yes, but only, like, when I'm at a casino. Like, I don't, I have, like, an addictive personality, so it's not a good idea for me to get into, like, fantasy sports and things like that. But if I'm at a casino, that'll do it. And so the best story I can give you, though, is, the thing about slot machines is that humans tend to trick themselves into thinking that they have a hot streak. Like, we see that with basketball, where if someone starts scoring, we're like, oh, yeah, they're hot, they're getting hot. But there's no, like, scientific data to support that. And so one of the things you fall into is when you're playing slots, you might think, oh, well, I'm due. if I sit at this machine long enough, I'll be due for it to pay out. And so I'm sitting in Atlantic City, and I'm at this one slot machine, and this little old sweet lady is sitting at another slot machine. And I'm on this machine for a good 25, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, just losing. I get up because, I was married at the time, and my ex-wife is like, let's go do something else. And so we get up, the little old lady switches seats, and within like a minute that we're walking away, you hear ding, 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 and you see all the quarters just shooting out at her because it's one of those like really old machines that still does that. And so that's probably the most I lost because she walked away with like $1,000.
She walked away with your money. Yeah, I've literally seen people get into fights like, all they're doing is getting up to get a drink or taking a quick piss or whatever and come back like, hey, what are you doing in my seat? What are you doing in my seat?
That was definitely, I wasn't going to fight her. She could probably take me in her 90s. She could probably still take me. But that was like one of those moments where I lost, but at least I got a good laugh out of it.
Yeah. What's your take on legalized marijuana?
Oh, I'm all for it. I want to legalize all the things. I want to legalize gambling. I want to legalize prostitution. I want to legalize marijuana, LSD. As long as you're not hurting someone, let's do it. I'm one of those people. So I think it's great. I do worry that the THC is sometimes higher than it probably needs to be. I think that was one of the problems in Colorado initially. I was in Chicago and a friend of mine brought home a bunch of stuff from Colorado just after it was legalized, and we were like, oh, okay, this is this is more powerful than it really should be. So that would be my one thing, is that I think that in some states maybe it's stronger than I think necessary, but I'm all for it. I think as long as you're not hurting anybody, let's do it.
Have you ever had a near-death experience?
Oh yeah. So I had a heart attack when I was 30.
Wow! Wow!
And flatlined. I'm a big Kevin Smith fan, and so he always talks about like the Widowmaker and the heart attack he had, and it was sort of like that, right? Like I had a blockage, and they took me in for a procedure. It didn't go well. I flatlined, and so I was clinically, DOA for at least a few minutes before coming back. But the bad news, right, is I didn't see anything. Like, that's always the follow-up question.
BJ, that's the bad news, is you didn't see anything.
Because I always get that. I was like, oh, what was it like? And I was like, I woke up like a full 24 hours later.
Wow.
And that's the first thing I remember is saying to the nurse, hey, don't you mean like it's July 14th? Because I went in for the surgery the morning of July 13th, and then she was writing like July 15th on the board. And I was just waking up and not realizing like how bad it was, and I was in ICU. So, yes, I've certainly had one.
Yeah, that's close. That's close.
Right.
I think this will be the toughest one I'll ask you.
Okay.
What's your career highlight so far?
My career highlight has to be going to Moscow, and being inside of this giant building that I can't think of anything bigger that I've seen stateside, and then inside this giant building, only speaking in front of 30 people, because one, it's Russia, lol. The people who run the automotive industry, there's only like 30 people that are in charge of their entire automotive industry. And so I thought it was kind of crazy just being there, talking to them about social media and marketing, and having them laugh at the jokes where they were supposed to, because I was the only person in the room that spoke English.
Right.
And so to me, like, I'm a big believer that if you're not laughing, you're not learning. So those to me have always been the career highlights. Like if I can get a room full of 30 very serious Russians to laugh at my stupid jokes, I am doing something right. If I can get a room Because I've spoke at the UN and I've spoke at...
Really? Wow, man.
Yeah. And I've spoke at conferences where there's like multiple languages in the audience and English is not the primary language.
Mm.
And like they're all laughing where they're supposed to be laughing. So like that to me has always been a career highlight. Because if you're... Because if I know I've got them, you know, like I you know, because when you grow up in, especially in the suburbs where you're sort of disconnected from things, you can be the class clown, but then you can go out into the world and find that no one finds you funny. But if you find that people from all over the planet are laughing at your jokes, you can safely say that you're funny. And so that's my career highlight. I got that validation.
I like that. Online, you are simply at BJ Mendelsohn on Twitter. You've actually got a bjmendelsohn.com website as well. Anything else we need to touch on here?
No,
before
I mean, those are the big things. If you want a cheap laugh, follow me at BJ Mendelsohn. I'm always talking about, if it's not pro wrestling, it's stuff like the universal basic income.
Right.
So there's sort of like this wide gulf of things that you'll fall into if you follow that account.
I do like you online. You're a good guy. You're funny.
Well, thank you. The only plug I got is over at bjmendelsohn.com. I'm doing a my first fiction novel. I'm publishing the chapters as I finish them. It's my version of A Christmas Carol, the great Charles Dickens classic, and it's sort of like, what if Donald Trump was Ebenezer Scrooge? So, like, if you're into that, just from that sentence, go check it out at bjmendelsohn.com.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Thank you again for taking the time to join us here at the Toddcast in Vancouver, and I guess we'll see you online.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.